Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Yeah. Hello!
Oh, my God, no! I didn't know you were coming!
It's okay. I should have said ready. Oh, well. Hello, halflings! Ooh. It's me, Jeremy Cobb. But, and I just realized I don't have the nickname sheet up. Now it's up. But Ellen Rose calls me, huh?
That's a good one, Ellen. Very good job. Yeah.
And I am joined today by...
Hi, it's my name's Olivia, but you can call me Liv. Wait, I'm Olivia Kennedy, but you can call me Liv. It's been a while. And also, if you think about it, it's really difficult because like Jeremy just did the introduction. So I'm all over the shop, you know, so I have an excuse this time. Olivia Kennedy, you can call me Liv. Thank you.
That you have given yourself.
Yes, exactly.
We will allow you to bestow the excuse.
Thank
but
you.
It's not just you and me, Liv.
No, it's not.
It's not just us
not Jeremy.
Doing our best to hold things together.
Yeah.
We are joined for this episode by two wonderful individuals.
Two.
We have the co-designer of the Kids on Bikes line of games, Home, and Calls to Action, Doug Lewandowski. And before the crowd goes too wild, we also have the co-designer of Kids on Bikes, the Kids on Bikes series, rather, Dead of Winter and Dinosaur Island, Jonathan Gilmore Long.
Oh my God!
This is the wrong dungeon and the wrong dragon.
Full Prince vibe? Woof!
Ha ha! This makes them even more black!
Cake glitches and pitches.
And lands in the cusp of a teaspoon.
Oh, no!
On a nat 20.
No!
You think this is just a game?
That's disgusting and I love it.
Yeah. We're about to get into something real big now.
I don't know what...
We have a live feed into Halfling Stadium right now. Folks are going absolutely wild.
Oh.
I see people foaming at the mouth.
Yeah,
folks have torn off their shirts.
They're going kind of feral,
my word, they have a full group tattoo of both of your faces.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's wild.
Like
a collage. Like a little... Oh, that's amazing.
It's a tattoo mosaic.
Mm. Yeah, that's the one. That's what I was going for. Yeah, thank you so much, Jeremy. I don't know what I would do without you. But yeah.
I'm crying. It's so beautiful.
It's so true. We can see Doug right now.
It's a common response. It's a common response coming on
this show. Welcome, both. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, folks.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, thank you so much. We are very excited to have you here. We have actually played Kids on Bikes on the show before. For any listeners out there who've been with us for a little while, you may have heard our Big Trouble in Little Manus series that came out, I think, earlier this year as of 2023. Mm-hmm. We're hyped. So we're going to kick things off by asking you both for your nerd origin stories. Mm-hmm. How did you enter this life of ours?
So I grew up playing some older board games, stuff like HeroQuest and, things like that. And I got into Magic the Gathering through Scouts.
Yes.
And, started playing a lot of Magic. I bought all the second edition D&D books when they came out. But I was one of those nerds that didn't have a group. So I just spent all my high school years reading RPGs and designing them, but not ever playing them because rule books are horrible. For the most part.
So true.
I graduated high school, grew up, got rid of my Magic cards, regretted it. And then, probably 15 or 20 years ago, I started getting back into modern board games. I just felt like, as a family, we were watching too much TV and not spending time together. So I just dove into modern board gaming and then, I was working in industrial robotics, so I was, doing programming, and I felt really creatively stifled. So I was like, well, I'm going to make a video game and use my programming knowledge to do that. And I spent like 3 months doing that, and I was like, this is way too hard. I'll just make a board game instead. So then that took me down that path, and I started doing it, just as a a fun expression and do something creative. But then, you know, I lucked into making it my career. So I was very, very lucky to stumble into that.
I was going to ask what your favorite board games, modern board games were. Cause I'm,
it changes all the time. Some of my perfect tens are Mansions of Madness, second edition.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Nations, The Mind. I love The Mind.
Oh,
so
The Mind
much.
Is fun. Yeah.
It changes from time to time, but those are some of my tens. How about you? What's your favorite?
Oh, I mean, I love a bit of Betrayal. The second edition came out very recently. I think it was my gateway drug of board gaming. Mm-hmm. Just being like, oh, wow, board games can be really good, actually. And it's not just like Monopoly and stuff. Even though Monopoly has its time, you can play Monopoly if you want to. But love that. I'm going to look over at my shelf of board games. Decorum is a good one.
I love Decorum.
Oh, good. No, amazing.
I don't know Decorum.
It's so much fun.
Two-player game about passive aggressively decorating your house.
Yeah,
it's really fun. That would be perfect for me and the wife.
Yeah, and you don't know what the other person wants, mm-hmm. so you're like trying to communicate it without saying it by like you're like I'll paint the bathroom blue, and then they'll be like, oh, I'm gonna paint it yellow.
Yeah, and then you can't say anything. All you can just be like, I hate that or I love that, and it's just really that's all you get to say. It's a really fun one, highly recommend checking out any of the games that we just mentioned. But yeah, and also you've made your own game as well, your own board game.
I've designed a bunch. Dead of Winter is really big. Dinosaur Island, those have both done really well. So I'm mostly designed board games. Kids on Bikes was my first RPG official design.
Amazing. I mean, I've got a fangirl over Dead of Winter for like 1 second. It's like one of my all time faves.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
It's so real good. It's real good. The Crossroad cards, just wonderful stuff. All right. Now I'm going to stop fangirling.
I wanted to ask before we jump to Doug with his nerdy origin story, I wanted to ask Jonathan, what would you say is the difference between, like, the biggest difference that you have found between designing a board game versus designing a TTRPG?
Oh, good question.
You know, that's a great question. And, you know, I'd love to hear Doug's thought on it, too, because we've talked about it quite a bit. For me, experientially, they're almost exactly the same. The biggest, because when I, you know, when we did Dead of Winter, I took a lot of inspiration from my love of RPGs and, you know, tried to put, you know, a lot of, you know, role-playing opportunities in it. And even being inspired by things like Minecraft, I was amazed by how good of a job it does of giving you a skeleton to hang a story on without, like, giving you the whole story. So I think those changes are pretty small. The biggest one is that board gamers want an objective. They have to have a way to win the game. Mm-hmm. Whereas with RPGs, the players know that the winning the game is telling a fun story and nothing else matters besides that. So like when I've looked at doing more hybrid things, a lot of times the struggle is trying to convince players to have fun without being like, you need 25 points.
Yeah. So it's essentially the difference between... the difference between like quest based, like you have to, it's objective based versus story based.
Player motivation is mostly it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the idea is that the motivation, even if like there's a scenario that the players could win in a TTRPG, that would be like supplied by the GM and the players together.
It's such a gross definition of what a game is, like what modern board games are. Like you can't put anything onto BGG that doesn't have a scoring system. Like they won't even let you list a game because they don't consider it a game. But I was like, by that definition, like Dungeons and Dragons isn't a game, and it says role playing game in the title. Mm-hmm. Like you can't tell me that it's not.
This is the part where I start yelling about Wittgenstein and family resemblances and then stop myself.
Yell a little bit. Let's yell a little bit. Let us know. What do you have to say about it?
Yeah. So this is one of the first things I do I teach mainly in high school. That's my day job. And I was lucky enough to get approved and get enough kids to sign up for a game design class to be able to run it. And one of the first things we do is sort of dispense with the definition of a game thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, with the philosophy of Wittgenstein, where he talks about, and it's specifically about games, his argument is that all definitions aren't really a there are neither necessary nor sufficient conditions to be defined as something, right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. But really, it's just what he calls family resemblances, right? Like, there's most games have a score. Most mm-hmm. games have an ending condition. Most games have a certain number of players. Most games have an in-game state and an out-of-game state, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But we could find an exception for every single one of those rules, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And maybe not the player one, but like, how helpful is that? Games have players. Great.
Wow.
Well, the game, which all of you just lost,
right,
is absolutely an example of a game that has no exit. Right. You're always playing the game.
Right.
We're going to get so many complaints, Jeremy. I can't believe you've done this.
What have you done?
I bet our editor may actually edit that out.
I hope he does.
So yeah, so that's my mini rant on...
I would actually love to be sat in on that class, honestly. But Dad, can you also tell us your nerdy origin story?
Absolutely. Yeah. So I grew up. I lived not remotely, but I think my nearest neighbor was like a half mile away. And so I spent a lot of time either by myself or with my younger brother, and we played a lot of classic games. We played chess until he started being able to beat me, and I refused to be
beaten. Don't want to play anymore.
By actually, a 6-year-old at the age of 9. or we played a lot of cards, a lot of Rummy, a lot of other board games. Upwards. I don't know if that's one everybody's familiar with. It's
not like that one.
It's sort of like Scrabble, but you can stack stuff up, and the higher the stack is, the more points you get.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a very
so like good a fun design. Dexterity game kind of mixed with a word game.
Well, just so the tiles stay stacked really well. They have little grooves to keep them on. But like if you put down the word rave, I can and you would score, 4 points for that because it's 4 letters long. Mm-hmm. I can come along and slap an O on the A and now it's rove and I get 5 points for it. So you're trying to put down words that can't be turned into other stuff while building off of. It's really simple, really smart. And, games like that, like Mass Market, Scattergories was another one we played a bunch as a family. And then in Boy Scouts didn't get me into Magic, but it did get me into D&D when one of the guys in Scouts was like, y'all ever play D&D? And we were like, no, Andrew, what is it? He was like, you're going to love it.
Did he like open up a trench coat and has like jacket, the player's handbook?
Oh yeah. It was like, I don't know if you've read the comic book series Die, but like when he presents the dice to the players and it's like, it was like that. It was like, you have to go buy dice that don't have 6 sides. We're like, what the hell is that?
This is like, it turns out Boy Scouts are absolutely a gateway drug.
Absolutely pushers. RPGs. Absolutely pushers. So I went out and I bought this set of dice that I still have right here.
Oh, that's so cool.
And we started playing D&D and that lasted a good way into high school. And then, high school is just what it is in terms of the amount of time you have to do stuff. And then kind of fell out of it. And then looking for some escapism at like a quarter life crisis, kind of fell back into it. And got into Magic for a little bit in high school and then got back into that. And I would say sort of like John, about 10 years ago or so, got into modern board games. Catan and Pandemic, I think, were like my two gateways into that. And Catan was also sort of my gateway into designing. My brother-in-law was living with us for a little while, and every night we would play a game of Catan. And when he left, my wife and I were like, well, can we play it with two? And we tried, and you can't. And I was like, but I'm arrogant enough to think I can fix this. And we tried for a couple weeks and it never quite took, but the idea of like playing with things. And I was like, what if we totally change this and this and that? Okay. And then a friend of mine and I
modded it in a way.
Yeah, yeah. a friend of mine and I started working on a game that we eventually took to Kickstarter, and then eventually took to Kickstarter again, successfully the second time, and that's sort of that's how it all got going.
Nice. What was the game, if you don't mind me asking?
Yeah, it was called Gothic Doctor. It was a game about treating monsters out of Victorian literature who've decided they don't want to be monsters anymore.
Wow.
So like, you know, pulling a fang extraction is one of the treatments. And it's,
yeah, that's fun.
It's got a sort of rummy thing to it where they have certain treatments you need. You play those from your hand, you take them, you get the points for them and that. So, yeah.
I love that. Is there like a list of monsters in the game itself, or is it basically do the players come up with it?
It's so there's a set of cards that come out, and they based on what's in the waiting room, you can treat, you know, if you have the cards to treat Dracula, but he hasn't shown up yet. Sorry.
Right.
Learned a lot on that project.
Yeah, I can imagine. I wanted to ask as well. Can you tell us a little bit more about Die the comic? Because I've never heard of it, I don't think.
Well, oh, it's man. Now an RPG, right?
It is.
It's an RPG. Oh, man.
It is an RPG that I would stab somebody to get to write for. so it's the concept is I heard a bunch of stuff about it, and it was another designer, Sen Fung Lim, who finally convinced me to check it out. He was like, you don't need to know anything about it. Trust me, get the first trade. And I was like, all right, fine. So the first issue is a bunch of kids get sucked into an RPG. And I was like, okay, great. Ooh. and then they come back and one of them isn't there anymore, but they won't talk about it. And I was like, ooh, mystery. I bet that gets resolved.
Skepticism.
Yeah. Luckily I bought the trade because then I was like, well, I've got the next four issues to read, and read the second issue and was like, Oh, that's something very different.
Ooh,
Yeah. And then it does something in the high single digits that I won't spoil, but absolutely blew me away with Gillian's focus on the source material and all that stuff. There was a small detail that he put in there where I was like, oh, that's funny. That's sort of like this other thing. That's definitely a coincidence because, man, that is a deep cut. And only English teachers know about that shit. Sorry, language on the podcast?
You're fine.
Yeah, okay. you can
curse as much as you want.
Okay. And then like three issues later or two issues later, boom, I was like, oh. And then I was fully committed. It's a 20 issue run. It is self-contained. It's a phenomenal, it's so good. Yeah, that and Something is Killing the Children are just like two of the just dynamite modern comic books that just so great. So great.
I wish you could see like,
I've heard of Something is Killing the Children.
Yeah. Oh, it's so good.
They're making a Amazon or Netflix series. I don't remember which one.
Okay.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah. Flanagan was attached to it for a while. Right. But then
who would kill it?
Oh my God. That would be amazing.
Yeah. Especially if it's like horror themed, I can imagine.
Yes, yeah, strong recommendation on both of those.
I managed to, I got to play the RPG, like a one shot with Kieran Gillen and Grant Howitt. I know, right?
Were they nice? Were they both nice?
Oh, lovely. Lovely people. Yeah, absolutely. And like, especially
live on air, just like, nah, they're jerks.
No.
I imagine.
Oh, what? No. Jerks. Bastards.
Lovely people. Very lovely. And it was a joy to like work with them. But yeah, no, you can like, having that experience of like Kieran himself, like GMing for us was wild. And I'll definitely hold on to that for a long while.
Yeah.
Very good stuff.
So how did the pair of you meet and start working together in the first place?
I think the first time we met was it Metatopia?
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Metatopia, which is a playtesting convention here in the States.
Oh.
It's a great convention.
Great convention.
You know, met lots of people, and I think Doug and I just kind of hung out for the first time there, and then you know, would chat online all the time.
Okay. And how did that lead to working together?
So when Stranger Things came out, I got like three episodes in, and posted on Facebook, like, all right, who wants to design a Stranger Things RPG with me?
But you said board game first.
It came up in memories.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, we've been getting this wrong for years.
We've been, we've been lying to people.
Oh no, memory is fallible. and so John said, well, I'm working on a board game. And I said, oh, cool. Can I get in on that? And he was like, no. But yeah, let's work on that.
It just hit me that I was like, wait, what?
not quite that harshly. He was like, well, I'm already working on it with somebody else. You know, we're at this stage of it.
Fair.
I was like, oh, yeah, totally fair. Cool. He was like, but yeah, let's work on that RPG. So we started kicking around ideas. We threw most of them out. I think we had like a full draft of the rules that we were just like, and we'll keep this paragraph. just kind of went from there. And then eventually, it was pretty clear that it wasn't going to be attached to the property. And then that freed us up, I think, to do more stuff and cause we were also kind of starting to think like, well, we want this to be more than just, well, here are your four characters, right? There you go. Mm-hmm. But also like all that stuff we grew up on, or all of, you know, the sort of look back retro media like Super 8 or Goonies or E.T. or, mm-hmm. you know, any of that stuff where the kids are the heroes and the adults are well-meaning, but either in their way or...
But kind of hapless, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So
it sort of pivoted from being like Stranger Things, the TTRPG, to more like Amblin, the TTRPG.
Yeah.
I can imagine that like getting the rights for Stranger Things would have been an issue, right?
Yeah.
It was wild at the time. Like I was in talks with a company for the board game already. And when they went to Netflix, they're like, the weird thing was Netflix had a licensing department to get licenses. But they had no idea how to sign license deals with anybody else.
Oh, okay.
So, like, when we approached them, they were like, we don't know. Why would anybody want to make stuff based on our stuff? And they wanted, like, an insane percentage at the time. Like, I think like they wanted, like, 50% of the profits or maybe even higher. It was crazy.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, I'm glad you went your own way, for sure.
Yeah,
we are too. Yeah.
What kind of stuff did you prioritize when building the system, like from a mechanical standpoint? Like to clarify further, if you say like Dungeons and Dragons, for example, could be considered a game about getting more powerful and saving the world, so there's an emphasis on, you know, gaining more abilities that you can then use to fight stronger and stronger monsters. Mm-hmm. And there's a very big emphasis on like the combat elements and the power fantasy of it. Mm-hmm. What would you say what kind of game were you trying to create with Kids on Bikes?
At first, and this is something we eventually pivoted away from, we were really thinking about designing a game about the sort of push and pull between things. So we have the six stats and each one of them has sort of a complementary opposite, right? Brains and brawn, fight and flight, charm and grit. Mm-hmm. And initially, the polyhedral die thing was something that came in really early. But initially it was, if your D20 is in brains, your D4 is in brawn.
Okay. Oh.
Okay.
And there was a bunch of other stuff mechanically about like the push, the pull, right? Like, and that's sort of where adversity tokens came from as well, right? You fail, but then this good thing happens.
Yeah, fail up.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then there was other stuff that we sort of pulled out and stripped away, because once we moved away from, we want this to be a push-pull game, a lot of it just didn't make sense anymore. Like the, you have, you know, this in brains, so you have that in brawn. Because that's not how people are, right?
There are no smart, strong people.
Right, yeah, exactly.
The more muscular you get, the dumber you become.
Yes, automatically.
As smart, weak guys, we felt it was really clever. But.
Yeah. But then Dolph Lundgren showed up and was like,
God damn it.
He ruins everything.
I have a PhD. Sorry, Dolph.
I mean, there were some other really strong driving directions too, I think. We discussed a lot about what a big problem onboarding on RPGs was. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I mentioned earlier, you know, Dungeons and Dragons 2nd Edition is a 300-page rule book that doesn't teach you how to play the game at all. Like, it tells you a bunch of rules, but that's why I never played as a teenager, is because I just didn't understand what it was like to play a role-playing game. And until I played, like, Apocalypse World or, you know, Dungeon World and got to see, like, oh, like, I don't have to know every detail of the city. And, you know, it's okay to just answer questions on the fly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because that was the thing that kept me back from DMing, too, is the amount of prep it took. So, like, we wanted story-forward, low-prep or no-prep GMing. Mm-hmm. We really wanted it to be like fail forward all the time, like Doug mentioned, with mm-hmm. adversity tokens. You know, we wanted there to be stakes, but not like super high stakes. Mm-hmm. And we talked about, you know, a lot, like how leveling systems don't make sense. Like in overall in video games and in RPGs, like the more you level up, the stronger everything else gets. And like, mm-hmm. it really hit me again recently playing Diablo 4. I was like, oh, it's taken me the exact same number of hits to kill these monsters as it did at level 1. I'm just pushing 4 times as many buttons to do it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is dumb. Like, so we, you know, we didn't really want like a lot of player progression, because we're like, and also like kids change from year to year, but it's not like they're, you know, becoming exponentially bigger like we want to pretend in a lot of RPGs.
Right.
Yeah. And they're not like all turning into the Hulk over time.
Oh, that didn't happen to you? Oh, okay. Yeah, that's so cool.
Liv is an absolute paragon. By the time she graduated, could fly.
Grabbing a diploma like
D20s and everything.
D20s and all.
Yeah.
So powerful.
And also, I think one of the other things was, and John was big on this, bringing in some of the like the board game design stuff into the RPG. Right. And that's where like the strengths rose out of. Right. So the tension between holding onto my adversity tokens to bump a roll up versus holding onto my adversity tokens to use my lucky strength or to ask the GM a question.
We felt like skills, like when you know, like if you have swimming, you're like, oh, I get +2 when I swim. That's not exciting. We're like, let's just make all the skills mechanical and have them do fun, cool things.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. That might be a good point because, Doug, I think we were going to ask you how you found like making board games versus RPGs.
To me, the main difference is that I think I'm good at making role-playing games.
cool.
You're very good at making role-playing games.
Thank you. I agree with everything John said. And I also think in board games, balance is a thing that you have to, there has to be the perception of balance at all stages of play, right? So an absolute brand new player has to see this game as totally balanced, as does someone who has a complex understanding of the skill and the strategy of it.
Sure.
Because otherwise, if you don't have that at the beginning, people play it one time and they go, oh, well, then you always just do this. This game is stupid, even if they're wrong, right? Or if there's a one dominant strategy that emerges over time, players say, well, okay, now that I've played it 3 times, I've mastered this game.
Yeah.
So it's whoever gets the first railroad station, they win, right?
Yeah.
Whereas with role-playing games, it's not that balance doesn't matter, right? If my character can shoot lightning bolts at a thought and your character stubs their toe a bunch, right? Like, it takes very specific players to want to play that. There might be, right? But the need for one-to-one balance, since we're not competing with each other, isn't as essential. If I feel useless, that's a problem, right? But and that's sort of where we came from with the rules for the powered character, where there's the shared control of that character, because if somebody's playing 11, everybody wants that, right?
Yeah.
I want to be the character with powers, and then, okay, let's play like the X-Men RPG then, right? Or Kids in Capes, but we'll get to that later. But I think in role-playing games, there's more wiggle room in terms of things being not polished as smooth. And I think those places where there are not rough edges, but edges, right? I think those are the places where people lean into different things or get interested in stuff.
And I mean, players are willing to overlook a lot more cracks in an RPG, whereas with a board game, if there's anything not in the rule book, they freeze up instantly.
What do I do now? I think also players with RPGs, they want to be part of that process of like making the game what it is. So like you want that kind of wiggle room, and that's always a good idea to have. But with board games, it's like I want to know exactly what I'm doing and be able to just go by the book.
I think because there's a winner and a loser, you need to be able to adjudicate all of those edge cases. It's basically like a sport. I mean, I feel like sports, obviously, sometimes people will say that sports are not games, but like they're
badly designed games. We need to modernize a lot of them.
To be honest, there's an interesting thing. Like, I'm not a huge sports fan, but I've been watching, I watch videos about basketball, and there's a very interesting thing where basketball over the past, like, less than 10 years, like the past 6 or 7 years, has become overly centralized around the 3-point shot. Someone basically they solved basketball. And it's due to a series of, like, there were some rule changes to try and allow for more scoring and stuff, but people were like, oh, wait a minute, 3 points is better than two, and missing even a high percentage of shots is okay as long as you're still getting 3-pointers over and over. And so now the way the NBA plays has completely shifted, and everybody has to have a 3-point shot. And so you have much higher scoring games, but also like less. If you look at like current NBA versus 90s NBA, it's a lot more physical in the 90s. It feels more like you're going to see more of the athleticism on display a lot of the time. And so there's a lot of fans who are like, it feels like the game has gotten, like a lot of people don't like the way the game has developed. But as the rules currently stand, the way that they play the game is seemingly the most effective way to play the game. And so it's I think whenever you have, like you said, Doug, whenever you have a clear strategy that is the overriding best one, then it can feel like you've solved the game. Even though there's a billion different ways to play basketball.
Whereas with an RPG, like one of the running jokes in the campaign that I'm in at home is like someone will do something really cool or get something they've been after, and my friend Ben, who GMs, will say, "Well, congratulations, you won D&D." And
what everyone wants to hear, obviously.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's the biggest difference to me, which John articulated really well. The winner loser versus we all win if we tell a really good story together.
Yeah, we're all winners. Absolutely. That's such a nice
John
message.
I wanted to jump back to a point that you made earlier, because this is a point I've heard people make before, but I rarely see it demonstrated, and I was hoping you could give us an example. You mentioned that in your experience, a lot of TTRPG playbooks don't really teach you how to play the game. Can you give an example of what you would like to see in a in a hypothetical playbook that would explain specifically, even in D&D, for example, like what if you're going to say, oh, this is how you play D&D in a book? Can you give us like a quick example of that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll toot our horns here because I think that we did some interesting things. But what we really want to do was kind of hide that we were teaching people how to role play. So it was really subtle stuff that came out during the design and playtesting process, like just the process of the session zero in building the town. When you're asking the players questions as their character, you're not explicitly telling them to adopt the character, but you're addressing them as their character and you're getting them used to speaking in that character's voice. So even little things like that, like the other games don't do that. Like some games, more modern games do for sure. You know, but like Dungeons and Dragons, they're like, here's how you fight. Here's how you roll skill checks, go at it. So we wanted more leading stuff like that to like, without outright saying this is how you role play, you know, give them some examples and let them start stepping into those shoes.
Yeah, because I have actually seen like sections in rule books like this is how you role play, and it feels very on the nose. So it sounds like your way of doing things is nice. It's like, oh, I'm tricking them into role playing, but not, you know.
And I think sections like that are good as long as they're like really clearly delineated, right? If it's how do you roleplay? I know how to roleplay. Skip to chapter three, right?
Shit.
And I think we, I think in second edition, we went even further with that. And it, in talking about the ways to collaborate at the table, right, and establish and maintain consent at the table, that's how you tell a great story, right? Like, hey, I'd like, Jeremy, I would like to put both of our characters in mortal peril right now. Is that okay? No, man, I just made this character. Okay. John, you want to get in on this mortal peril thing?
Oh, yeah. Put me in.
Don't mind right. if I do.
And so things that I think in the past have been called safety tools, right, are really just the way that I make sure this is the story that both of us want to tell.
Yeah.
And Kate Bullock wrote...
amazing.
Did amazing writing, amazing work on that section.
It really helped us like mechanize every piece of it and integrate it with the game. You know, things like, you know, we have like pumping the brakes, and we did thematic things with all of it where, you know, she helped take those safety tools and like really, you know, build them into the system. Just like
the way you just explained safety tools is, I think, beautiful, because we actually just had this conversation in a recent episode about just how much of the backlash just feels nonsensical. Like it feels like they genuinely missed it, whatever their introduction to safety tools was. Feels like they missed the point entirely. Yeah. That it's literally just making sure everybody wants to play the game the way that you're playing it.
Yeah. Right.
That's all it is.
Yeah. I think I don't want to abstract it too much, but I think the majority of people like that are the GMs and not the players. And they're probably GMs that get very upset when the players don't just tell the story that they want to tell.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think those people should just go write books.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's collaborative storytelling. It's not just you tell people to do it. And it's funny because when I was first GMing, that was my impression of what GMing was.
It
was
just like, me too.
Yeah, like you're setting people on this track, and if they deviate, then you're just like, you just immediately panic. But yeah, it's good to, you know, come at it initially and be like, hey, don't feel that way. You know, work with your players. Like, I feel like you probably, that came across well with Kids on Bikes, I feel like.
Yeah, and like even things like when we talked about doing the Kickstarter, because originally Doug and I were just going to Kickstarter ourselves, and then we, you know, met Ivan. But when we were talking about the Kickstarter and having people come in and write things, we're like, we don't want them to write adventures, because I don't find adventures fun to run, because it's railroady, right? We're like, let's do modules where people give like this setting and some monsters and some rumors, and like give them, let them build a world, but then let the players just play it.
This HeadGum podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there. And you know what? You can update it with an app. So every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt.
Mm-hmm.
So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. now available on digital. Crow portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
I remember reading through the rules for Kids on Bikes and thinking that at the end of it, I had a much better idea of how to specifically play the game, because there are very clearly delineated, this is what you do for this, this is what you do for that. But again, not in a way that feels like it's trying to explain how to play a role-playing game in general. Like, I think, essentially, I think you did a very good job of explaining the Thanks. Rules of the game and how to play the game, and also the mindset of playing the game, like an ethos. I felt like the game had a personality that it was very clearly explaining to me. And so I was like, oh, okay, this is what this game is about by the end of it. Like, so I think you accomplished that.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. I'm also curious. So you've adapted the Kids on Bikes system into a whole line of juveniles on modes of transportation. What was the inspiration for starting to do that? And what have been some of the changes that you've made? Because I noticed the first one I actually ever played was Teens in Space. And I was surprised because I'd heard of Kids on Bikes and I'd heard of Kids on Brooms. So I was like, why are they suddenly teenagers?
That's our biggest regret about that system is calling it Teens in Space.
Yeah.
It should have still been Kids.
Kids, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the initial thought on that was we want a lot of the stuff around Teens in Space. You know, one of the driving concepts there is poor impulse control, right? Like, how do space adventures happen? People being dumbasses, right?
Yeah.
And so, who better than teenagers to rush in guns blazing, or I'll diffuse the core of that Death Star. Yeah, no problem. Put me
as
in,
long
coach.
As it impresses my crush, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
My character was literally the most guns blazing guy to the point where the rest, perfect. I was the captain and the rest of the crew started planning a mutiny for the series because I was too much of a loose cannon. It was great.
Good for them.
That one started, I was walking over. I actually have the note still magneted up to my fridge. I was walking to a con where both John and I were going to be, and I knew he was going to be playtesting a game when I got there. So I have written on there, hey, had an idea for an in-depth module, Kids in Space. And handed it to him. We agreed. And so that's how we got started there. And then we were talking as we were wrapping that up, wrapping up the design on that, we were on a call with Hunters and Renegade, and Scott said, I've looked it over. I really like where this is going. I love, it's evocative. It's getting to the stuff, Star Wars and all that stuff that I loved as a kid. And I was like, yeah, me too. Like, space opera was my thing when I was younger. He was like, and it's just so cool. Like you can just sort of come up with a title. And then I think from there, the modifications become kind of clear, have you decided what you're going to do next? We're like, well, we kicked around a couple ideas. He's like, yeah, but I found myself just sitting there brainstorming titles and being like, oh, that would be cool. That would be cool. Kids in Mechs or Kids on Brooms. And we were like, yeah, Kids on Brooms is our next one. He's like, oh, you guys thought of that already? We're like, no, but Kids on Brooms is our next one now. And then, oddly enough, in parallel, Spencer Stark had designed an in-depth module to shift to a magical school. And we just synced up and, God, what a dream he is to work with.
You're the best.
And hang out with and look at. He's just dreamy in general.
he's a good guy. Yeah. Good guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so...
And a lot of times it starts with a conversation of one of us being oh, I want to do this. Doug want to do Teens in Space. With Kids in Capes, I was I want to do a superhero one. And Doug was no, Like, why? Masks exist. You can play kids and teens in that. We don't need to do that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you're probably right. And I just shelved it. And then I watched Stargirl on, I don't remember what station it's on.
CW.
Yeah, it's on HBO or whatever. And I was like, dude, just watch like the first half of season of Stargirl and, you know, think about it. And he watched it and I was like, oh yeah, it's kids in a small town being superheroes. Like, right. Nobody's doing that.
Yeah,
and I was like, that's exactly the vibe that I think we can do.
Right. And, yeah, and all like three episodes in, I sent him a text that was like, yeah, okay. You were right.
And it's that conversation, I think, that really inspires us, too. Because with Teens in Space, it was talking about the touchstones. Like, you know, he mentions poor impulse controls. And like when we were talking about it, I was like, oh, Guardians of the Galaxy is a Teens in Space movie. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not teens, mm-hmm. but they all behave like it. Yeah. And, you know, Star Wars. So those touchstones help us a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I completely agree. Whenever I think of, like, for example, Amblin Entertainment, the TTRPG, or like Harry Potter, the TTRPG, like, you can see very clear parallels to where it's like, even if it's not a direct reproduction, you can see the influence of the various touchstones. And I think it creates a sense of familiarity. If you're just coming into it, even if it's like your first TTRPG, if you're familiar with those properties, then you have an immediate understanding of what the game is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On some level. It's also really good as well, because like it's promotes accessibility, because like once you know one of them, if you've played Kids on Bikes, then you're going to be able to just jump onto Kids on Brooms. And it's nice to be able to like have that know that there are completely different worlds that you'll be able to play in. It's really good. Mm-hmm. It's really cool. Mm-hmm.
Now, most recently, because I knew about Kids on Brooms because of Dimension 20's season, Misfits and Magic, but they also just did a Kids on Bikes season, like a hacked version of the game with Mentopolis. I was curious, because I understand that both of you helped consult on that season. What were some of the changes that you made to the system in order for it to fit not in a small town with a bunch of kids, but inside of a person with a bunch of adult aspects of the person's brain? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I haven't had the chance to watch it yet, so I'm not sure what they implemented. We sent them a bunch of ideas. There was even one thing where we said, like, we can't decide if this is a better idea or this is a better idea to do the sort of investigation puzzle solving thing that you want included here. So here are two ideas. Use whichever one you want or don't. Like, it's fine. Mm-hmm. One of the main things, though, was revising the tropes to be focused on these sort of like film noir tropes, right? Like the femme fatale, or the, you know, the brutal nightclub owner, or and they had a really strong vision of, you know, this connecting to the different parts of the psyche. It was a lot of fun to work on. We also made up a bunch of new strengths, things that were more like moves from the Apocalypse World games. But still using, you know, adversity tokens to activate. And then something that, again, I don't know if they implemented, I forget, what do we call it? A crisis?
I think so.
Where if the parts of the psyche can't agree, it causes a crisis, which causes things to go haywire. And I think our suggestion was that could even, like, if they wanted to kick out to the real world, right? This could spark that.
Okay.
So I don't know how much they ran with. I don't know what was going to work for what they were going for, but I think that was the main stuff. John, was there anything else?
No, I think that's the majority of it. Okay.
That's really interesting, because like maybe you could even going forward with different like different RPGs that you make, you could like implement some of those ideas, because they sound really, really cool.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, like Kids in Trench Coats or something.
Yeah, we had never thought of noir as a perspective thing for it, but
yeah. Mm. It's, yeah, like, I mean, Brick, there are so many. Basically, have you ever seen the movie Brick?
Mm-mm. No.
Ryan Johnson's first movie before he ever made Looper it stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt. It's a high school noir movie called Brick with like very arcane 1940s style dialogue, like gumshoe dialogue. He's got like all the tropes of like the bad guy with some strange physical feature. You have like the sinister goons. You have like the femme fatale, but all of that in a high school setting. I highly recommend it.
Oh, and wait, no, I think I have seen bits of this. Yeah.
I love Rian Johnson. So,
yeah, you should check it out. It's his first movie. Yeah. I think he wrote and directed it. It's good.
Nice.
The other thing I wanted to touch on is, you mentioned it earlier, Doug, Kids in Capes. The development process for this. I understand you, I wish I'd seen this now, but you live streamed the development on Twitch?
The initial stages of development, yeah.
Okay. What was that like?
Yeah.
Like weekly for like what, eight weeks, I think?
Six weeks? Yeah, six or eight. I forget which exactly. Yeah, basically for a summer we got together and live streamed our process there. And you know, that's not enough time to finish it. And it's enough time to get the ideas out there that sound really good.
Nice.
And then as we started, sort of putting pen to paper and pulling it all together, a lot of that stuff didn't mesh or other stuff meshed better. But yeah, it was really, really interesting.
What was the thought process behind it? Like, was it to get kind of like live feedback about what you were doing, or was it just, what do you think?
Part of it was to share with the community what we were doing and, you know, let them see, because, you know, there's a lot of people that come up and ask us like, how do I design an RPG, or I want to design an RPG, what do I do? Mm-hmm. So we saw it as a chance to like, you know, show our work a little bit and let people see, you know, like how ridiculous it is when you design an RPG how it's all about just, you know, throwing out horrible ideas over and over again until something's good. Mm-hmm.
That's really cool, because it's like seeing that behind the scenes process, I bet, is really interesting. Are those videos like still up, or is it just in the ether now? Okay.
Yeah, I think we streamed it via YouTube, correct? I think on the Hunter's channel. I don't remember exactly.
On the Hunter's website, the announcement says that it's on Twitch, but it may have also been put on YouTube.
Yeah, Hunter's Gathering Kids in Capes live development.
I really quickly, can you give us an idea of like how you're approaching, because obviously in Kids on Bikes you have the tropes, are you using that for like superhero archetypes, essentially, like, oh, your Spider-Man equivalent, or your street level hero, that sort of thing, your superpowered paragon who can the Batman. Flying brick type. yeah
So we, and this is another thing that I think sets this apart from the other ones I know about. I'm sure there are games out there that do this, but you start the game without your powers, typically, right?
Oh, okay.
So you begin with a trope already, right? So some of them are similar, some of them are very different, that lean more into the, like, you know, not from this world, you know, or like escaped experiment is one of them. But who are you as a person before you get your powers? And then there's a tech tree where you choose your power and your cape, and you sort of mix those together. Your cape and your role on the team. And your cape is your power, and your, I think, maybe I'm getting this backwards now. Crud.
Anyway, you're correct.
Okay. You know, and this is something that Nick Sauer, who is one of the designers on that, was big on, and I think it's a great idea, that you can have the same power, right? You could have fire powers, but take different roles on the team. You could be the marksman, right? You could be the tank who just sets himself on fire and runs in there swinging. Cool. You could be the one who manipulates fire to like manipulate people on the battlefield and like put a wall of flame there to keep them over there to protect this person while they do this. And so you merge those two together to create who your character is growing into. And then eventually work towards a capstone power that you design with the GM that really merges those two, that represents your character fully embracing, fully understanding their role on the team and their powers in a way that brings them together, so that now you are Yeah. Fire fist. That's... Now you are flamethrower, right? Now you are.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's the arc of the like... first superhero movie, essentially. Right. Like the arc of like Into the Spider-Verse, that sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's nice being able to go into like a game, like, because in D&D, you know where you're going to end up. But like, it sounds like with this, it's like it can like move and change as you play. That's really cool.
Yeah. I can't wait to play this. You also mentioned kids in mechs. Is that just a joke or like, because I was like, oh, so Evangelion, the TTRPG sounds good. Are there any ideas? I don't know. Have you considered possibly doing that one?
We've talked about it a lot and I think we're the only two people that want it to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, now there's a third.
We're like, it could be Zord, you know, it could be Power Rangers. It could be
Voltron. What was
Voltron.
Oh, Voltron. Like, yes. I love Voltron. Oh my gosh.
Like we have all those touchstones that we love, but there wasn't the support for it from everyone. We may do it at some point, but
I mean, we've got a group right here. There's four people who want to play.
Let's design it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Exactly. Run it for, design it for us. We'll play it.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I'll do a whole series. That sounds like a blast. thank you so much for your time. We have one last tradition that we do on the show, which is to ask you both for a tale from the table, which is like a significant, could be funny, could be tragic, could be epic, a memorable time that you have had playing TTRPGs. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and whichever one of you wants to go first. Douglas got an idea.
Doug, let's deep in thought. I think for me, it was more of a bad experience than a good experience, but it really set my direction. It was the last time that I played Dungeons & Dragons, and it was third edition. And my group would meet up at like 11 a.m. and usually play until like 11 p.m. or so, you know, like once a month. And we sat there while one player went through like 25 books of wizard reference material, probably for an hour and a half, trying to find the specific thing you wanted to do. And the entire day was one combat and that player referencing the books. And I was like, this isn't for me. I was like, I'm never going to design anything like this or play anything like this ever again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's interesting because we don't normally get many like bad tales from the table. It's really interesting to hear like that probably like informed how you went forward as well.
100%. Yeah. In what I played and what I designed. And, you know, I loved the time with my friends. I loved hanging out. But like I was discovering that the times that we met up and then somebody canceled at the last minute and we just played something else was more fun than the actual D&D sessions.
That's quite an indictment of the sessions themselves. Doug, do you have one?
I do. I have so many. That's what I was deep in thought about. And I was trying to decide if I want to do a good one or a bad one, but I'll do a good one.
Okay. Balance it out. Yeah.
Yeah. So having come from playing games with my younger brother and thus being very competitive about them, you know, like, I spent a lot of time trying to win D&D, right? When I was playing second edition, and then I jumped right to fifth when I got back in. But I'm still not like a play-to-lose player in D&D. I am in Fiasco, because how else do you play Fiasco? But
yeah, for sure.
I was still struggling with like, well, when my character isn't successful, it feels bad. Until... my friend Ben was running a game and we'd been playing for 5 years at that point. We ran for 7 years. And our character, there were three of us playing. Our characters were unbelievably powerful, you know, at the point where we were well known around. And we went back to a town where we kind of messed up the last time we were here a long time ago.
Okay.
And like, we didn't like, you know, massacre the town or anything, but like, we didn't do a great job. So we walk in to this bar and with the intent of, we want to like talk to the people and let them know, like, we're on our, like, my character's on his redemption arc. He had been kind of evil leaning and he'd gotten good. Mm-hmm. He'd had a like a religious experience with Obad High, like a whole thing. So we walk into the tavern and I'm like, all right, I want to convince them how great we are. I want to buy them a round of drinks and tell them that we're glad to be here. And Ben was like, it sounds like a persuasion roll to me. I was like, it's exactly what I was thinking. All right. So his thing is, you, you do what you're going to do, then you roll and find out what the reaction is, right?
Yeah.
So I go through the whole thing, greeting them, you know, like grandiosely. That's a one.
Natural one. Yeah, he goes,
they all look at you and you're the guy who came in here and now he's throwing his money around and thinks he's better than everybody just because like he did the king a favor one time. And I'm like, yep, okay, all right. And the ranger says, I got this. I explained to them how we, you know, we've grown as people and we're sorry for what happened before. And, you know, this whole thing, he goes, okay, you gotta be kidding. It's a one.
Oh no.
And he goes, oh no, they don't believe a word you say. Like, oh, they're like, these guys who are going to come in and tell us this bullshit. And they're getting angry.
An angry mob is going to form, I was going
to
say.
Right. We don't, you don't need a perception check to know you should probably walk out of here. And my friend Jack goes, well, I haven't gone yet. And we're like, Jack, don't, bud.
Do it, Jack. Do it.
And he's like, he's a monk. And he says, you know, I want to tell them about religious redemption. And I want to tell them the story of how through the power of Obad Hai and the power of Yandala, we've become, we're like, Jack, don't do it. Jesus, we're going to have to like knock out a bar full of people. Like, I'm like, we can do non-lethal combat, right, Ben? He's like, well, let's see if it gets to that. 20.
Oh,
nice.
And he's like, yeah, they still don't like you. But they drink what you gave them. And you leave without throwing any punches. And it was like just a great moment of it. Like, it was fun to roll those ones. And so I finally got like, it isn't about, I want this thing to happen, so that's the way it'll be fun. It's my character wants this thing to happen. It'll be fun if it works, and it'll be fun if it doesn't. So that was like a real like light bulb moment for me.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
How about you? So cool. How about you two?
Yeah.
So before I was on the show, I was actually like interviewed on the show. So I gave a few little tales from the table, a few of them. But I believe as a quick recap, one was like about the same character. She had found out that her sister had purportedly passed away. She hadn't actually, but it was like an amazing like role-playing opportunity, and like me and my friends came together and it was like lovely to see them come together for my frankly very annoying character. And the same character, who's a water ganassi, failed a constitution check so hard when she was knocking back like a drink, it was a crit fail as well, that she projectile vomited. And then because she's a water ganassi, she caught it in midair with her shape water. And then just very gently put it out the window like, yeah, okay, I'm going to head over. Yeah. Jeremy, what about you?
I have one from playing Teens in Space.
Ooh.
I was playing a Squillian. He was the captain of the ship. His name is Captain Cinnabar Sunray. And he was an absolute loose cannon. His whole idea, I sort of subverted the Squillian thing, which the backstory of the Squillians, for those of you who don't know, is that they used to be used basically as feeders for a group of people, like a species called the Maw. And they, at some point, I think the Maw disappeared, and there's rumors that they may or may not still be out there, but most people think they're at least in our game there were, but I'm pretty sure it's like they're thought to be extinct, but still the Squillians have like a fear of being like, there's an automatic like reflex to be afraid of stuff. And my character had been raised to be by his father to be his mindset was never be the prey, always be the predator. So he like he turned that fight or flight response into just fight. And so if it looked like things were going to kick off, the laser pistol comes out immediately, and it's the Danny DeVito Always Sunny meme. So anyway, I start blasting every time. And as I said, the crew started actively planning a mutiny, and I ended up becoming co-captain. I had to relinquish my captaincy and become co-captain with another one of the players. And by the end, as it turns out, our ship was sentient, and we had progressed, our ship gained the power of speech, and I ended up I forget exactly how. I don't think we ever explicitly said how, but our ship would bud. It started to bud, like, and create little baby ships. And it was not really an implication. It was just sort of stated that I was accidentally the father of some of those buds. It is teens in space, folks. It's teens in space. I had accidentally fathered a number of the buds and ended up with a girlfriend who was the ship. And by the end, I had actually become a much more mature person.
I love it.
Through this relationship, because now I had responsibility to care for my little buds as well as, like, live up to my partner.
Wasn't that an episode of Futurama, Jeremy?
I've never watched Futurama, believe it or not.
You should.
Doug, you know.
Yeah.
From what I've heard, that is pretty similar. Yeah. I'll have to check it out.
That was almost the story that I told, is the creation of that species. Mm-hmm. Because it was, we were playtesting that at Metatopia.
Metatopia, yeah.
And somebody misheard the description of the alien. And I don't remember what we said, but they thought that we said that they were a source of food. And we're like, that's amazing. And then we had them, like, redesign or make an alien race that was the source of food for another one, and, like, gifted their sheddings to other people because they were delicious. We're like, this is so good.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, there was a running joke that I kept feeding my molts to the crew without them knowing. Like, I'd slip it into other food and be like, I just
grind it up like
pepper.
I want
to share myself with you.
I want to shit.
Yeah, well, anyway, thank you so much for being here. Do you have anything you'd like to plug before we close things out?
No. I was thinking, I don't think I have anything that's, like, really at, like, new at market right now. Coming soon, though, Home, which is a game about surviving the night in a haunted house.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
What? Oh, my God.
And second edition Kids on Bikes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Very cool. Anything for you, John?
Collab is a board game that I designed about being down on your luck mad scientists who can't afford their own laboratory. So they have a co-working space. Wow. So that's why it's called Collab.
I get it. Yeah. Very good.
and it's a collaborative board game. It's still competitive, but what you do benefits everybody else. Mm-hmm. And I did development on the Hello Kitty game that's on Kickstarter right now. So I did a lot of work on that. So if anybody's interested in Hello Kitty, please check that out.
Oh my gosh. My friend Maddie is going to lose her mind. She's so into Hello Kitty. Oh my gosh.
It's a pretty fun game. It's clever.
Awesome. Amazing. John and Doug, thank you so much. We would love to have you back in the future.
Absolutely.
Let us know if you do that mech game. Cause
I'm so down.
let us know if you two want to design it with us. Cause that would be the impetus we needed.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely is the answer.
Absolutely. Cool. Liv, do you have anything you'd like to plug?
Oh my goodness. Jeremy, so in one of our Jamal's Inner Circle hangouts on the Discord, I was very recently called out for the fact that on Blue Sky I am Liv Kennedy and and then everywhere else I'm at Does Dark Magic. But still, that is the case. Is it underscore Kennedy? Maybe. Yes. Anyway, mostly at Does Dark Magic in different places. twitch.tv/ Olivia Does Dark Magic. And also I'm on YouTube. I'm once again Olivia Does Dark Magic. I've uploaded like 2 videos recently. It's wild. Like, I think
I've watched them both. You uploaded the Glee one recently. Yeah. And then I remember you uploading another one. I think I watched that one too.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much, Jeremy. It's been very fun. And I'm going to work on getting another one up there soon. It's been really nice. It was really exciting. But also, I'm over on youtube.com/Dicebreaker for all of that fun tabletop goodness. And also, we're on youtube.com/3BlackHarflings. You can subscribe to us if you would like. Thank you. Jeremy?
Yes, you can. That was excellent, Liv. That was fantastic. You can follow me on Twitter. At Jeremy Cobb 1, Cobb with 2 B's, the number 1. Same on Blue Sky. Maybe I'll be posting there more.
Well done, Jeremy. Well done on the synergy.
Look, it helps that there's only one Jeremy Cobb 1. I'm not sure. It doesn't seem like that unusual of a name, but apparently there's been only one. There's 2 Jeremy Cobbs. One is Jeremy Cobb, and the other is Jeremy Cobb 1, and that's me in both cases. So there's also Instagram where I am the Cobbmeister, and you can follow me on the Quantum Reactor. It's a sci-fi TTRPG Review podcast. I've also been appearing now and again on Dungeon Master's Block recently with friend of the show, Neil, that we've had him on. And I think I've been on Dungeon Master's Block twice, interviewed three Black Halflings was on there a while ago. Yeah, go check out DM Block. It's a good show. Nice.
Go ahead. No, Jeremy, you finish, and then I want to jump in with the thing. Go ahead.
Okay. I don't know if it's really possible to sign up with me at D3AC anymore, because I think my table is full, but you know what? Go and check. See if you can. Because it's coming up at the end of this, at the end of October. It's going to be great. It's going to be a blast. Playing a new Tarum. I'm also doing a Paradox Perfect one shot. So go sign up and play to me. Play with me there. And then also Project Mirana on the Roll For It's Twitch channel was a Call of Cthulhu game where I play a sad 49-year-old gay hockey coach. Good wait times.
A minute. Hang on. Once again, I'm just like, wait, Moral Oral? Wait, hang on.
I've never watched Moral Oral.
Oh my God. You just
it's wild because I'm a fan of Dino Stamatopoulos. I love Starburns on Community. I love Anomalisa, which is Starburns Productions made. I've never watched Moral Oral. It's
highly recommend, watching it, but then also there's some really cool video essays on YouTube. I love me a good video essay. But yes, what I wanted to say is you reminded me with all of your good plugs, Jeremy, is that I'm going to be, we're going to be going live on Monday, the 2nd of October. I know, which it might
that's
not
in
be
2 days.
That's in 2 days. So it's probably this episode's probably not going to be out by then, but you should go back and watch it. You should go back and watch it on RP Geeks' channel with the wonderful Sharmini Bandel, who was in Curse of the Spider Queen with us. So we're going to be playing, the Jane Austen RPG, but it's there's an actual name for it that I will figure out. However, it's called Universally Acknowledged. So basically, it's like Jane Austen kind of vibes, but it's going to be set in space because it's RP Geeks, you know. So and it's going to be really
space
fun.
Space Regency,
exactly. Yeah. You should. Good Society. It's called Good Society. The RPG we're going to be playing. And it's going to be really fun. And you should check out RP Geeks because we're going to be doing two episodes, and then the second one will be on Monday the 9th. Haha, at 7:30 BST.
The next two Mondays, then.
The next two Mondays. That's it. Like Jeremy, I'm not used to being on things.
It's all good. There's a storied history of three Black Halflings collaborating with RP Geeks at this point.
Yeah.
Because you will have been on there. I DM'd a game for them.
Yes.
Sort of a what's the name of the movie? I cannot remember the name
Blade
of the
Runner?
Movie.
I don't know.
No, not Blade Runner. It's in that vein. It's cyberpunk. Stars Bruce Willis. Stars Mila Jovovich.
I know.
The Fifth Element. That's what it is. The Fifth Element. It was a Fifth Element inspired one shot with also elements of other British, famous British sci-fi. That was a blast. I know Jasper's been on there. Go to their website go to the YouTube page. Just like look up our names and see if you can find
rpgeeks.co.uk. They're also good folks, and you should check them out. So
they were a blast to play with for sure.
Yes.
And one last thing. I'm going to be running a charity. I'm going to be in a bunch of charity games on, I believe, let me just make sure I got the dates right here.
We're so good with dates, and we know where we are. We know what's happening all the time.
Yes. I believe October 14th and 15th are the 2 days.
Okay.
Maybe the 13th, 14th, and 15th. But I'm going to be in a pile of games with Tabletop Titties. They're working with Salal Sexual Violence Support Center. They're a great organization. I've done one-shots with them before. I'm going to be playing in a bunch of games across the 14th and 15th. And then I'm going to be GMing. And by that, I mean Mothering, an alien RPG one shot. I think it's the last game on Sunday the 15th. So if you ever want to see me run a just straight up space horror game, go check that out. Yeah, it's got a great cast too. I believe Lexi Black Girl Mage is going to be in it. I believe Kate Osborne, Katie Osoris is going to be in it. Members of the Tabletop Titties group are going to be in it. Tabletop Titties, of course, Char and Kelly, both who were on Big Trouble in Little Manus. Dare Hickman, who was on what's the name? Transplaner. I can't remember the name of Trans. Yeah. Like one of our closest friend shows.
Yeah.
and I actually played with all three of them in the Teens in Space game, which will presumably be released at some point. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure.
In fact, it was Dare and Kelly who were leading the charge to mutiny. And it was Char's character who became my co-captain Winona. It was great. Anyway, enough plugs. thank you all.
We're doing some stuff, gang. We just want to share it with you.
We got a plug for Jasper too. Go check out, you know what? Yeah, he's not here right now. Go check out Burrow's End, Dimension 20, because I think that'll probably be airing by the time this comes out, which he's on Dimension 20. My goodness.
Our boy's on Dimension 20. Can you believe it?
Go check out Rotating Heroes podcast. Yes. I believe they're going to be releasing a backlog of episodes first, but then Jasper's going to be the new DM.
Jasper's GMing it. It's so exciting. We're not surprised. You shouldn't be either. It's good stuff happening.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome. It's going to be sick. And who knows? Maybe down the line, some of those rotating heroes may be halflings.
Who I could not possibly say. I mean, that sounds like I'm like, ooh, but no, I don't know. I have no info. So, you know.
Yes. I may or may not have a tiny bit of info, but we'll see. Have we run out of things to plug, Liv? Have we covered this?
I think so, maybe.
Yeah.
Never ending.
Okay. Speaking of never ending, actually, Anansi's Tapestry of Tales. Never ending is the name of the publisher. I wrote two NPCs in that. So when that comes out, go check it out. Yeah, I wrote one of them is a black halfling, in fact.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I wrote a black halfling and a black dwarf. So they're both short black people.
Yeah, beautiful to see it.
Yeah, go check it out. All right, anyway, with that, so long, Shire Folk!
Oh my god. I was so shocked by you ending it. I was just like,
that was a HeadGum Podcast.